This is the Winchester Talking Newspaper for the week ending the 30th of November 2018. Hello and welcome to the Winchester and District Talking Newspaper with extracts from the Hampshire Chronicle for the week ending the 30th of November, which this week have been edited by Margaret Boyden and Linda Vincent. Your readers today are Nikki Baring.
Hello.
Norma York.
Hello.
And Paul Maxlow-Tomlinson.
Hello.
And I'm your rather croaky presenter, Keith Vincent. The main headlines this week: doubts on congestion charge, Winchester District too restrictive over homes, and £30,000 bus pass fraud crackdown. So, Nikki, may we have the story behind the first headline, please?
Which was doubts on congestion charge. The idea of a congestion charge is a non-starter, according to City Business Leader. Civic chiefs have proposed the controversial charges should other measures in a new strategy fail to reduce city centre traffic. Drivers would have to pay to enter the centre of the city, as happens in central London. But Chris Turner, acting director of the Business Improvement District, said Winchester was too small and the congestion charge's positive impact was reducing in London. He said Winchester is not a big enough place for the charge to make any difference. 40,000 people is not enough and it would not work terribly well. In general, Professor Turner said he welcomed the strategy and business recognised that it needed to be flexible in its calls for more parking in the centre of the city. He said he wanted to see more in the strategy about buses and railways that would give people an alternative to cars. The new movement strategy is the most comprehensive look at how people get around the city for more than senior member of Winchester Friends of the Earth and long-time environmental campaigner welcomed much of the new document. But he argued that park and ride is no real solution and it would be better to get people onto proper public transport. And he added, "We are very alarmed at the introduction of enhancing strategic road network capacity. Increasing strategic road capacity has only one known effect, and that is to generate traffic. It never solves any traffic problem, any congestion problem, any economic problem or any environmental problem. It only ever makes things worse. Improving Junction 9, for example, will clearly allow more traffic to access the M3 and more to leave it, so that Eastern Lane becomes a traffic generator for cross-town traffic. This is very, very worrying. So lots of good words and direction for progress, so at least it takes us back towards the Winchester Town Access Plan, which long ago promised traffic reduction." WIN ACC's Tom Brennan, Executive Director, broadly welcomed the strategy, supporting its call for bold solutions and the priority of reducing traffic in the city centre. But Mr Brennan said it is particularly important to encourage healthier lifestyle choices for the most vulnerable, people whose health suffers because they are heavily dependent on cars, breathe in the worst air pollution and get too little exercise. More should be done to invest in infrastructure to support zero carbon, clean growth, he said, and added, "We would like to see more work on how to remove barriers to walking and cycling." Among the future ideas is a Western bypass, something that has been mooted for decades, but dropped as a serious idea over the last 20 years.
Winchester District too restrictive over homes. Winchester has been named as having one of the highest number of villages unsuitable for growth, due to the way housing developments are restricted, a new report claims. According to the CLA, an organisation representing owners of land, property and businesses in rural England, Winchester has 65 villages in which housing allocation is either highly restricted or not permitted. The organisation looked at 70 local plans, with Cornwall topping the list of areas with the most villages deemed unsuitable at 213. The research comes amid a number of campaigns by villages in Winchester District to stop developments, including Mitchell Devers Station and South Wanston. As previously reported, initial plans have been revealed to build 6,000 homes at Mitchell Devers Station, which marks the latest chapter in nearly 30-year planning saga. The scheme has attracted scorn from the likes of Winchester MP Steve Brine, who says at a packed public meeting last month, they want to make a killing by killing the countryside. Meanwhile, an action group has been formed to fight 16 affordable homes in South Wanston. The parish council described the scheme as much needed and said affordability of housing is a massive problem in Winchester District and South Wanston is no exception. While campaigners argued, it is certainly foreseeable in our lifetime that Southampton to Basingstoke will come one enormous housing conurbation and with little greenfield land left in place. Following the release of the report, CLA South East Region Surveyor Tim Bamford said, "Sustainable development is not just for towns and cities. Finding and promoting sustainable solutions for rural communities is vital to the long-term vitality of the countryside. Current practices mean small settlements are dependent on very proactive local authorities to meet their needs. Although Cornwall tops the list of the most unsustainable villages, it is in fact an excellent example of an authority addressing the needs of small rural communities despite the classification. Other rural local authorities should follow and use all the mechanisms available to deliver affordable housing." Mr. Bamford added, "Without more opportunities for young people to remain in the local area, these small communities face an uncertain future. We want people to be able to live and work in the countryside, but they are being held back by lack of affordable homes. Winchester, which came 12th in the list, is waiting the results of a consultation on a draft local plan for up to 2036. They are due to be released at a City Council local plan meeting on December the 3rd.
£30,000 bus pass fraud crackdown. Travel chiefs have launched a crackdown on pensioner bus pass fraud, which is costing the council taxpayer thousands of pounds. Now, civic chiefs are warning expired passes will be confiscated if used for travel. It comes after it was revealed the invalid permit journeys cost Hampshire County Council £30,000 last year. They say that invalid permits, such as an older person's or a disabled person's pass, can now be identified by bus ticket machines when scanned, which will alert the driver, who will then take action. Currently, a replacement bus pass is sent out to owners 2 weeks before the expiry date, with drivers allowing them to complete their discounted journey, with the difference paid to bus companies by the County Council, while they wait for the new one to arrive. But if they haven't used it in the past 6 months, this automatic renewal is cancelled in a bid to save money on permits that are not used. However, residents who are eligible can still request one if needed. Councillor Rob Humby, the transport boss of the County Council, said, "Bus drivers have been able to withdraw expired passes for some time, but technology in ticket machines is now able to pick up passes which are linked to replacement passes, essentially making sure there are not two passes registered to one person in circulation." Last year, around 27,000 journeys were made with invalid passes, costing Hampshire Council taxpayers an extra £30,000 towards the scheme of the concessionary fare. The new rule will come into effect on January the 1st. The older person's bus permit, gained by residents when they reach pensionable age, entitles people to free travel on bus services throughout England from 9:30 a.m. to 11 p.m. Monday to Friday, and all day at weekends and public holidays. A disabled person's pass entitles people to free all-day travel on bus service journeys, starting in Hampshire, not Portsmouth and Southampton. Councillor Humby added, "We are asking holders of concessionary passes to make sure they're using the correct pass before they travel by checking the date to make sure it's still valid. If they have reported a pass lost or stolen, we would ask that they use the replacement pass they've been sent."
Thank you. That concludes the headlines. And now we continue with the death announcements, then Christian comment, letters to the editor, Chronicle comment, and first person. And then we've got Belgarum and the announcements and what's on. I should explain there is no historical items this week because the Hampshire Record Office has been closed and there's been no access to it. The Hampshire Record Office reopens on Saturday, December the 1st. So we start with the death announcements this week. Bailey, Helen Elizabeth Bailey, formerly of Old Alsford, who died peacefully in Winchester, aged 94. Foras, Max Foras, died peacefully on the 19th of November, aged 78. Francis, John Maxwell Francis, known as Max, died peacefully on the 20th of November, aged 88. Harris, Heather Mary Harris, died on the 13th of November, aged 88. And I should point out that Heather was one time one of our active readers and indeed was secretary of Winchester Talking Newspaper. Higgins, Nigel Hubert Stanley Higgins of Droxford, who died peacefully on the 15th of November. Marsh, Jean Marsh, died on the 22nd of November, aged 82. Root, Celia Mary Root, née Holland, who died on the 17th of November after a short illness. And Willington, Molly Willington, née Acott, died at home, aged 79. And now, Paul, I think you've got a Christian comment for us.
Christian comment this week begins, "Christmas is coming. We know that by the shelves in the shops, the lights in our streets, Christmas markets and fairs, and the dozens of coaches arriving daily to visit the magical Christmas market and ice rink in Winchester. But wait. First, we have Advent to journey through. The Christian Church doesn't just launch us into the joyful season of Christmas without warning, as the supermarkets do. It marks a season of waiting and wonder. Advent is the arrival of a notable person or thing, says the Oxford Dictionary. That speaks for itself, and the arrival of a notable baby in Bethlehem is an event we can look forward to with greater joy even than lights, presents, concerts, music give, although they do add much to our understanding of the mystery of his coming. Actually, Advent hasn't even arrived yet. Last weekend was the feast of Christ the Universal King, when Jesus is celebrated as the King of all that is and has been. Then comes Advent. Next weekend, 4 Sundays before Christmas. So it will move us from darkness to light over those 4 weeks. And many churches will begin that journey in symbolic ways on Sunday, using candles, lights and wonderful music to bring the Advent in. We will spend 4 weeks reflecting on Old Testament texts prophesying the coming of Christ and, rather confusingly perhaps, the voice of crying in the wilderness of John the Baptist. Confusingly because he was born just a few months before Jesus, but his exhortation to prepare is one we have to hear, "We do not know the hour or the day." Matthew 25, verse 13, is a reminder that we may celebrate and organise the calendar and events, but we do not know when he will come again. So be prepared. There are ways to wait and journey through Advent. Wreaths marking each Sunday with a candle, calendars with or without chocolate, perhaps pray in silence or with music or books of reading for each other each day. All of these and other ways can make the arrival of Christmas so much more fulfilling than having presents wrapped and turkey ordered by early December. Christmas overeating, family arguments, hangovers, and all the risks that those festive few days could bring will be endured with so much more joy looking back on a good Advent. I like to follow the star of light, using the changing moon cycle, beautiful sunrises and sunsets. My Advent wreath and finding extra time to be quiet and reflective before all the Christmas joy. That is my Advent until that wonderful season of Christmas arrives to be enjoyed with its happy message of an amazing day. The Advent of a noble person in Bethlehem. Joy to the world. Prepare well.
Thank you. Now we move on to letters to the editor. Nikki, I think you've got the first one.
And this from Robert Barnes, entitled The Future. Sir, Steve Brine, MP, set out his views on Brexit in last week's edition. This, unlike the microscopic print, is welcome, whatever are our own. I heard Lord Reedsdale, Lib Dem, state confidently on Thursday in his briefing to the London Energy Managers Exhibition that he is absolutely certain the deal will fail in Parliament and that we shall remain in the EU. There may be a second referendum. Whatever happens, no one has, to my knowledge, set out clearly, since the 2016 referendum, the EU's own strategic plan for us to consider, regardless of Brexit. Our MEP must now do so. My understanding is that the commissioners are determined to complete the federation of the EU within the next decade. This was the vision of the late Chancellor Kohl nearly three decades ago. In particular, this will mean Brussels taking over member countries' foreign and defence policies and probably developing VAT into a federal tax. If we stay, we would almost certainly be required to join the euro at some time. Therefore, in that event, if we were to remain, our embassies will eventually have to close and we will have a problem with our Commonwealth relationships and our dependencies. We and the French will probably forfeit our seats in the UN Security Council. Possibly our three devolved governments and Westminster will become separate EU states within the Union. The Commission is currently trying to form a European army, concerned by USA attention to China, the Pacific, and less with NATO. The white ensign and the RAF's randals would be replaced by the circle of gold stars on a blue background. Since Lisbon, there is no country veto. An example is the Spanish Gibraltar issue last week. If I'm wrong about this prognosis, I will stand corrected by someone with better facts. And this from Robert Barnes, Elizabeth Place, Chilbolton Avenue, Winchester.
Safety first. Simon Lever writes, Sir, when there was a potential threat of Winchester being targeted in a nice type attack being aimed at pedestrians, the local council took immediate action by placing concrete barriers to provide as much protection as feasible. Strolling along the High Street, Winchester, the visually pleasing, though no less effective, barriers are a tangible sign that people's safety is not taken for granted and deserves positive recognition. And there's a photograph of Councillor Jan Warwick by one of the newly installed High Street barriers.
Richard Parfitt writes, Sir, I would like just to say that the idea of having to pay to drive into Winchester is wrong. That's why we pay road tax. So if I need to go to the doctor, I'll have to pay. This is so wrong. The roads need to be put back to two ways like they used to be. For example, North Walls. If you're going to Andover or Wick, you can go up North Walls, and if you need St Cross, then you go Upper Brook Street. This way, you do not have to go into town. The whole road systems need to be fixed, not just charging drivers. It's just another tax on drivers because it's easy. Whoever is designing the road system needs to be sacked and get someone who drives in who understands. So, as I do not work in Winchester, I would have to leave work 2 hours before my appointment to give me time to drive home and get a bus. So that's 2 hours I would lose. Sort the roads out, writes Richard Parfitt of Walpole Road, Stanmore, Winchester.
Oh, and this, I'm sorry, I wasn't aware I was coming on scene. I'm Bob from Bob Whitmarsh, called Clearing the Air. Sir, I would like to draw your attention to an inaccurate and misleading headline, Cities Among Worst for Carbon, Chronicle, November 15th. As the author of the report, prepared by Winchester Action on Climate Change, WINACC, for the City Council, on greenhouse gas emissions in Winchester District, to which you allude, I would like to point out that Winchester District, population 123,000, is much larger than Winchester City, population around 45,000. Admittedly, there is some confusion on the internet between what constitutes the city and the district of Winchester, but it is unfortunate that the headline does not clearly differentiate between the two. It is also unhelpful and even misleading in the same article to refer to the City Council's own efforts to reduce its carbon emissions, successful as they are, when this same topic is covered separately on page 14 of the same issue. The Council's emissions in 2016-2017 were around 4,200 tonnes CO2, whereas the district's emissions in 2016, calculated on a similar basis, were 664,000 tonnes of CO2, almost 160 times greater. The emissions from Winchester District mentioned in the report are almost entirely caused by those living and working there, whether at home, at work, or driving vans and cars. Only if we each address our own contribution to emissions will we have any chance of mitigating global warming. The Council spokesman is correct in relating emissions to a strong economy and a rising population. However, as my report states, a growing and very buoyant local economy is not necessarily conducive to reducing emissions unless it is closely managed in a sustainable way. Sadly, such management appears to be lacking, and that from Bob Whitmarsh of Berwick Avenue, Wick, Winchester.
Time for vote two. Sir, credit to Steve Brine, MP, for expressing his views and setting out his position now that Brexit reality is upon us, Chronicle, November the 22nd. The article raises the question, what is the reality that we face and what choices do we really have? For the government's reality is that there is no clear support for the PM's position. It has no overall majority and cannot command the loyal support of their backbenchers to pass its proposed deal. The choice of the government must be to look beyond the proposed withdrawal agreement and ensure a deal which is the most advantageous to Britain's prosperity. The hardline Brexiteers did have a choice to elect one of their own as the PM or support Theresa May. They bottled it in 2016 and they've bottled it in 2018 by their failure to remove the PM when she is at her weakest. Steve Brine is right in claiming that they must accept their share of the responsibility for the current impasse. The reality they now face is they must back the PM's compromise position on Brexit to secure a deal or end this Brexit farce and side with Remain. The no-deal alternative, which they claim to support, is not an option, since their dream of a clean exit with no negative economic impact is delusional and has even less support in Parliament or the country than that of the current offer. For the Conservative Party and its backbenchers, the reality is that the May deal is worse than Remain in the EU. A point acknowledged by Dominic Raab and Boris Johnson. If we rule out the clifftop leap into the dark, which is a clear danger from a no deal, then they must choose to keep the status quo and remain in the EU and reform from within. The reality for Remain supporters is that their statements on the consequences of leaving EU are proving to be a true reality check and not project fear. It is a recognition that that Britain must remain in the world as it is and not the imaginary. This means being part of the EU, trading on equal terms, having a strong voice in Europe, securing continued in economic prosperity, security and influence that the European partnership brings. The biggest reality check faces voters. The reality is that the people now have a clear and informed choice based not on fiction, but on hard reality of the here and now. The choice facing our MPs is clear. It is to support a people's vote. I hope Steve Bryan will also recognise this reality and go beyond backing the government, but backing the nation and giving the people that choice. And that's from Mike Moore, Park Road, Winchester.
Ted Hart's letter is entitled The Lulu Policy. Sir, I was stunned by Winchester City Council's statement that they are concerned by an increase in the traffic in the city. Chronicled November the 22nd. They are, through their planning department, responsible for turning around 50 houses in Chilbolton Avenue into 500 flats and creating 300 houses at Winchester Village. But the worst is yet to come. The old police headquarters in Rumsey Road will have 200 plus houses with one outlet onto the main road. And then there is the insane development of Barton Farm of thousands of houses with cars that will gridlock the Andover and Kingsworthy roads, not to mention rerouting a main road through a housing estate full of children. All we ever hear is park and ride. That's the answer, but if you've done a 10 to 12 hour shift at the hospital and then two or three buses drive past you with bus full on the front, I don't think you'd agree. And more cycle lanes, have you ever tried to cycle with two children on your back? Get real. I was thinking of how to describe my opinion of the council when a rerun of The Comancheros came on TV and John Wayne's character replies to a daft request from Stuart Whitman's Paul Regret. Monsieur Regret, you are a Lulu. Couldn't have put it better. Ted Hart, May Tree Close, Badger Farm, Winchester.
And from M. Elliott, entitled Not Needed. Sir, I attended the extraordinary meeting that Mr. Anderson mentioned in his letter, Chronicle, November 22nd. The pavilion was crowded into overflowing with interested and concerned South Wanston residents. What I took away from the meeting was a clear understanding that the planning rules applicable to rural exception sites are being flouted by this proposed development. The very same housing association that plans to build here lost a case in the High Court, and the relevant parts of the judgment were quoted. It was explained that for rural exception sites, people have to need to live there, not merely want to. We were told that the 800 affordable houses being built at King's Barton fulfil any need for affordable housing South Wanston might have. I was convinced by all this that the development should not, actually, could not go ahead. The level of community support was questioned. It is another requirement of allowing affordable housing to be built on greenfield sites outside the settlement boundary, as the case is here. Twice as many households had voted in support of resurfacing a car park than support affordable housing. Only 17 out of the 888 residents, 1.9%, had suggested that Goldfinch Way site as suitable for development, and yet it had been constantly referred to as the preferred site in publicity, including a leaflet sent out by Winchester City Council to all residents. The lack of amenities here was outlined. Since September, the Saturday bus service to Winchester has been reduced to 2 hourly, even fewer amenities. I sincerely hope that South Wanston Parish Council will be as convinced as I was by what I heard and will not pursue the plan for a development on a greenfield site, but will work to ensure that the village boundaries are kept intact. And that from M. Elliott, Pine Close, South Wanston, Winchester.
This next letter is under an artist's impression of the new sports centre, and it reads, naming the new sports centre. Sir, three names have been suggested by the City Council for the new leisure centre at Bar End. The Soak, which is a medieval name for the suburb near St John's Church. The Mint, which is an ancient times was located near Wolvesey Palace. And the Chalk Flower, which sounds to me like the name of a pub or restaurant. As a Highcliffe resident, I feel the following names are more relevant. 1. Highcliffe. Local residents were asked for their support and it's on their doorstep. 2. Garrison. This site is on garrison ground, so there is a historical connection there. 3. The Water Meadows. Not far from the site. 4. Bar End. The list could go on. I wonder what other readers think. Hopefully they will make their views known by completing the survey on the Winchester City Council website and include their own suggestions. And that was from Thomas White, Milland Road, Highcliffe. And under the picture it's got the titles The Soak, The Mint or The Chalk Flower or Bar End Sports Centre.
Roger Stevens' letter is entitled Sovereignty. Sir, I agree with Mr. Wright, Chronicle Letters of November the 22nd, that many who voted Leave did so because they feel they have been left behind and their localities blighted and neglected. Fishing fleets and their communities have been devastated. However, it's not the EU that blighted and neglected, but the Conservative government that citizens of Winchester have so enthusiastically endorsed in recent general elections. As for fishing, if our MEPs had spent more time promoting our country's interests and less time bad-mouthing the EU, outcomes could have been rather different. Let's hope there is enough magic Brexit dust to sprinkle over these problems and all the others. As a Remainer, I do acknowledge some benefits of Brexit. Our patriotic MEPs will no longer be paid. The EU will benefit from our departure. Due to the decline in business activity, a third runway at Heathrow will not be necessary. HS2 will be cancelled for lack of funds. The housing crisis will be eased as EU nationals return home, many taking their well-paid jobs with them. All those British expat tycoons, film stars, TV personalities, sportsmen, etc., who have become rich on our patronage, will, in a spirit of patriotic fervour, return to this country and pay their taxes and farm flying pigs. The Brexit deal has united our entire nation. Everybody thinks it's lousy. The quotation attributed to Thomas Jefferson, "Peace, commerce, and firm friendship with all nations, but entangling alliances with none," is rather ironic. When he was Vice President of the USA, it comprised 16 states. It went on to become an entangled alliance of no fewer than 50 states, the richest and most powerful alliance in the world. What would Mr. Wright forego to be a poor master rather than a rich servant and make our country sovereign again? How much of his income is it worth? Would he give up his home? Thanks to his actions and those of his persuasion, many will have misfortunes of this nature thrust upon them. Roger Stevens, Cliffway, Compton.
Strangling the Future of the Countryside. Fascinating report from the CLA over rural development. Apparently, the landowners' pressure group has number crunched and the Winchester City Council comes 12th in a list of authorities where housing allocation is either highly restricted or not permitted. There are some 65 villages where new housing is very difficult to build. CLA South East Regional Surveyor Tim Bamford said, "Sustainable development is not for towns and cities. Finding and promoting sustainable solutions for rural communities is vital to the long-term vitality of the countryside." The CLA argue that the countryside is becoming the preserve of the wealthy, the retired and commuters. Few would argue that the 6,000 home scheme at Mitchell Devastation is a non-starter. The real question is lesser, but still significantly... Sorry, is still significant development in villages. Most villages had a steady flow of house building up into the 1960s. Cheriton, near Alsford, is one such place. Since then, new build has tailed off, and now only large, expensive family homes are being built. But was Cheriton wrecked by the building of such roads as the Pastures, the Goodens, Raeburn Close and Markhall Close? The CLA would argue not, and that the pendulum has swung too far the wrong way.
Thank you. Now we move on to first person, Norma.
A reply to the Prime Minister by Ron Allison. Dear Prime Minister, thank you for your letter, which I received last weekend by way of my Sunday newspaper. I am taking this opportunity to reply. My concern is, of course, Brexit, which, like you, I believe, I was against leaving at the time of the referendum in 2016. Like the millions of others who did not and still do not want to leave the European Union, I'm extremely worried that we are about to do so. The result of the referendum, however, as we are frequently told, expressed the will of the people, and it's rightly what now will happen. To use the well-worn cliché, we are where we are. In your letter, you say the deal that has been endorsed by the EU is a good one for the United Kingdom as a whole and is the best available. It gives us control of our borders, control of our money, control of our laws, and ends the jurisdiction of the European Court of Justice. It also will enable us to control the relevant fishing and agricultural arrangements. You further say there will be close security cooperation with the EU, no hard border with the Northern Ireland and the Irish Republic, and our overseas territories, and the Protectorate will be treated as part of the UK family. The response has been varied, as I'm sure you would have expected. Tony Blair says that all you have done is to succeed in uniting the people in opposition to the deal, but I do not think he is being entirely fair. You, I imagine, will not disagree with that. However, he is right in thinking that many of us will be confused by it all. Is it possible to support you personally while in particular situation disagreeing with what you're trying to do? It might be a bit tricky, but it could be the case. So, Prime Minister, may I say I am impressed by your calm, clear determination to win the approval of Parliament for a deal which means facing down not only opposition from across the House of Commons, but also from some MPs sitting on the benches behind you. While by no means agreeing with all your views, may I say that I find it reassuring that we have a leader who does at least lead. Finally, I know you want as many voters as possible to be involved, so I will be suggesting to all Hampshire to contact their Member of Parliament with their own views. It may not make a difference, but they will have been involved and had their say. That can feel good. You may not find it in any way interesting that I would like you to know that over the many years as contributor to the Hampshire Chronicle, I have never before written a political piece. Maybe I just wanted to make certain that I was not the only columnist in the country never to have mentioned Brexit. Sorry. Yours sincerely, Ron Allison. P.S. Since writing the above over the weekend, my own reading, viewing and listening have made it increasingly obvious that there are very many who oppose the deal as it stands. You have made it crystal clear that it is the only possibility you see as having any future. Many who disagree do not always put forward their own alternative, but are together in saying that you are wrong. The vote in the House of Commons in early December will be crucial, not only for the policy, but for the future of your government itself. To say the very least, these days immediately ahead will shape the future of the United Kingdom for many years to come. I sincerely hope your decisions are indeed the right ones.
Items from Belgar for us.
Yes. The first one is Return of the Minsk Nuns. The nuns from Minsk in Belarus are back at the Winchester Christmas Market. Pretty much every year since the market started early this millennium, the Sisters of St. Elizabeth Convent have had a chalet at the market in the close, raising money for their work in the former state of the Soviet Union. They have become pretty switched on with the media, issuing a press release. The sisters always bring joy to their visitors with unique handicraft items made with love and prayer in the convent's numerous workshops. You can also enjoy the warm and meaningful conversations with the sisters. You will have the opportunity to purchase a variety of colourful gifts, handmade ceramic products, and other items made of wood, glass and metal, as well as music and video discs will make wonderful gifts for you and your loved ones. By buying the products made in the workshops of St. Elizabeth Convent, you support the convent's ministry with children and adults with special needs. The lay Sisters of Mercy and the nuns of St. Elizabeth Convent look after several orphanages, hospitals, residential care facilities, and a TB clinic, as well as two rehabilitation centres for the homeless. There's also a visiting nurse service. Another article here is called Alfie the Canine. King Alfred the Great has long dominated Winchester, literally so since the statue was erected on the Broadway in 1901. Bus companies, a college, pubs, many businesses have all been named after the Wessex monarch who defeated the Vikings and laid the foundations of the English nation. So here's a first. Canine Partners have now named a puppy after the great man. Alfie the puppy has been part paid for by those that contributed in any way, large or small, to the Mayor of Winchester's charity during the period 2017-18. This very new trainee will be in the hands of a puppy parent and then go for advanced training to become a fully-fledged canine partner and partnered up with its new disabled friend. Councillor David McLean, the Mayor in 2017 to 2018, told Belgarum, "The process of training takes in excess of 2 years to complete. And having been a puppy foster parent already, we know how much hard work and fun goes into the training. So thank you, everybody, for your support during the year." The third article is headed Naming the Sports Centre. What's in a name? Winchester Civic Chief have launched a consultation to find a name for the new sports centre at Bar End. Their three suggestions are the Mint, the Soak, and Chalkflower. Cue much critical comment on social media. What, people ask, have any to do with the sports centre? The council says the Mint reflects the medieval money-making nearby. The Soak is the name of the area where the bishop had jurisdiction. And the Chalkflower from the soil. At overview and scrutiny committee, Councillor Martin Todd said the naming process is not being taken seriously by the residents and the suggested names haven't been met with overwhelming approval. The names have nothing to do with the function or location of a leisure centre. Councillor Guy Ashton, portfolio holder for finance, said, "We are putting names forward that are thoughtful and interesting and are listening to the responses."
Garum, now we've got What's On. A couple of concerts. Winchester Cathedral on Saturday the 8th of December at 7:30 p.m. A Christmas fanfare that features the Wainfleet Singers. Andrew Lumsden is conducting choral, brass and organ music. Information and tickets from the Winchester Cathedral box office on 01962 857 275. On Friday the 21st of December in Romsey Abbey, Joy to the World, Christmas. Philip Lawson is conducting the Romsey Singers with music and carols. Tickets are from the Romsey Tourist Information Centre on 01794 512 987. If you want some pantomime, Cinderella will be presented by the Worthy Players at Jubilee Hall, Kingsworthy, on the 7th, 8th, 14th and 15th of December. All tickets are available through the website. I'm sorry, there's no phone number for this one. So it's www.theworthyplayers.co.uk, and that will give you all the ticket information you need. At the Theatre Royal on the 7th of December at 8 p.m, Dr. Phil Hammond is presenting his very hilarious Happy Birthday NHS one-man show. That's at the Theatre Royal at 8 p.m, 7th of December. Ticket office is 01962 840 440. And finally, free lunch at Christmas. A community cafe in Oliver's Battery will be serving a Christmas lunch to those spending the holiday alone this year. Thrive Cafe and Wellbeing will be run by volunteers on Christmas Day to provide the food and friendly company. The lunch is free, but a place must be booked. Transport to and from the cafe, also free of charge, can be arranged. And if you want to book a place, contact Amanda, and the telephone number is 07541 830056. That's Amanda on 07541 830056. Now, lighting up time ends Friday the 30th of November at 7:45 a.m. and begins at 4:02 p.m. Next week on Wednesday the 5th of December, it ends at 7:52 a.m. and begins at 4 p.m. And if you know someone who's sight impaired and would like to receive our recordings, or if you have a problem with the recording you've received from us, please telephone Mary Davis on 01962 711 998. And now we continue with further items of general news, Nikki.
And this one headed Airline Search in Search for Buyer. An airline which operates out of Southampton Airport is in talks about a possible sale. Under pressure, regional airline Flybe has said it is speaking to a number of strategic operators about the sale of the group. Flybe said the decision to put itself up for sale is among a range of options being considered as it battles against challenging conditions in the airline industry. Last month, the airline warned full-year losses would reach £22 million due to a combination of falling consumer demand, a weaker pound and higher fuel costs. The group has hired Evercore as advisor to help with the review and sales. It comes just weeks after Flybe warned over profits following easing demand, a £29 million hit from rising fuel costs and the weak pound. Flybe also announced an underlying pre-tax profits of £9.9 million, up from £9.2 million a year earlier when the group revenues fell 2.4% to £409.2 million. Chief Executive Christine Urmière-Widner said the group continued to see improvements in the third quarter and said cost savings had already helped to drive progress in boosting profits. The airline is now valued at around £25 million, far below the £215 million when it floated on the stock exchange in 2010. Stobart Group, which pulled out of a bid to buy Flybe earlier this year after the airline rejected its offer, could return, according to Sky. Flybe, whose roots date back to 1979, has 78 planes operating from smaller airports such as London City, Southampton and Norwich to destinations in the UK and Europe. It serves around 8 million passengers a year, but has struggled to recover from a costly IT overhaul. I shouldn't make any comment about that, but no. Flybe, they've got a picture of the aeroplane, a propeller aeroplane, but on the front, it's called the George Best, and there's a picture of George Best on the front of the aeroplane.
Impasse over surgery moved to be set to be overcome after talks. Civic chiefs say they are expecting work on the new Winchester City Centre GP surgery to get underway in the next 16 months. Plans have already been approved, which would see the doctors at St Clement's Surgery moving to the 100 yards to a new purpose-built facility on the Upper Brook Street car park at the junction with Friarsgate. However, the scheme has hit a number of stumbling blocks in recent years, which threw the move into doubt. Now, a new report, which went before the Overview and Scrutiny Committee on Monday, has revealed progress is being made in negotiations with the doctors. As previously reported, St Clement's Surgery, which has around 16,000 patients, had been negotiating with the City Council to relocate to the site by May 2019, after a previous forecast of summer 2017 was missed. But council documents concerning a planning application for the current building revealed a rift between the two parties. In a report that went before Winchester City Council's Planning Committee this summer, the council's head of estates, Kevin Warren, said, "Despite discussions between the council and the doctors over a number of years, it now looks unlikely that an agreement will be reached." It came as the Planning Committee refused to allow office use at the Tanner Street practice owned by City Councillor Kim Gottlieb. An appeal against the decision is currently being considered. The surgery has been continually delayed. It lies in the heart of the Central Winchester Regeneration Area, better known as Silver Hill, and is even though the first scheme collapsed, the surgery had been expected to relocate by autumn 2017. Planning permission for the development on the corner of Upper Brook Street and Friarsgate was initially granted in 2012, with revised plans backed in March 2016. According to the Overview and Scrutiny report, £3.8 million is forecast to be spent on the new surgery. The only remaining doctors in the city centre following the relocation of Friarsgate to Week and Riverside to the former St Paul's Hospital site at Oram's Arbour at around the turn of the millennium. Meanwhile, it was also revealed the plans for the new car park at the Dean in Alsford have been delayed while negotiations continue with developers. And there are two pictures, one of the current St Clement's Surgery on Tanner Street in Winchester, and then there's the artist's impression of the St Clement's Surgery to be built on Upper Brook Street. Well, fingers crossed.
Real picture of a quarry at Ropley Lime Quarry off Soames Lane near Alsford. A plan which sparked outcry over the risks to nesting falcons has been rejected for up to 10 homes at a disused quarry. A decision on Ropley Lime Quarry had been expected in early summer after being submitted in October 2017 and was delayed for a number of months. However, the scheme, which was branded unacceptable by critics and attracted dozens of objections, has now been thrown out by councillors at East Hampshire District Council. Developers had been seeking outline planning permission for the site in Soames Lane near Alsford, and the project had been recommended for approval. A report said any impact would be acceptable, and a £100,000 contribution would have helped provide off-site affordable housing. However, councillors on the planning committee went against their officers, rejecting the scheme as they felt the site comprises a greenfield site which is located in an unsustainable location outside the defined settlement policy boundary. As previously reported, residents and conservationists objected over fears for local wildlife following a critical report which labelled the risk to nesting peregrine falcons as substantial and unacceptable. Tristan Norton, senior ecologist at Hampshire County Council, told planners, "I have now reached the carefully considered opinion that on balance, the risk of the birds deserting the site altogether is substantial, and this is unacceptable ecological impact. From my discussions with Mr. Keith Betton of the Hampshire Ornithological Society, and the Ropley Quarry pair are one of only four pairs in Hampshire whose nest site is in a natural, semi-natural setting, rather than on an artificial structure such as a pylon or building. In my opinion, this raises the conservation significance considerably. Mr. Norton added, although not listed as threatened, the peregrine falcon remains an uncommon species across the UK. The population in England has only recently reached a good state of recovery following near catastrophic declines. It is thought that the falcons have been nesting at the site for the past 3 years. Among the other objectors was the Hampshire and Isle of Wight Wildlife Trust. Trevor Codlin, Senior Specialist for Planning and Development, said, "The presence of a breeding pair of peregrine falcons in the quarry is significant, and we remain concerned at the potential success of the mitigation proposals. To exclude this pair from their nesting site for one reason and then expect them to return, find the new nest holes and breed when the character of the site will have changed significantly must be considered to be very optimistic."
From Westminster, Winchester MP Steve Brime. Writing in 2016, outlining why I intended to vote Remain in the EU referendum, I said life inside the EU wasn't perfect, and life outside certainly wouldn't be either. Unsurprisingly, I have not changed. I regret the national vote to leave, but I fully respect it, and that's not a Brexit U-turn. Over the past couple of weeks, since the Prime Minister first presented the draft withdrawal agreement, I have heard from hundreds, if not thousands, of constituents. Of course, there remain extreme views at either end of the debate, and a still divided country, but my sense is a quiet majority who want this done. Here's why I think this is the right deal and the right time to do that. The referendum was close run, and a very large part of the problem ever since has been deciphering what 17.4 million people wanted and finding the common threads, a surely impossible task. My take on the deal is that, remarkably, it draws those threads together. It secures the rights of EU citizens living in the UK and UK nationals living in the EU. It agrees the terms of a time-limited implementation period, which business desperately needs, and a fair financial settlement, because this is a country that meets its international obligations. It creates a free trade area for goods, reaches common ground on a close relationship on services and investment, including financial services, which are of great interest to many of my constituents. It ensures we will control our own borders and end free movement, that we will no longer send vast sums of money to the EU, so we can spend more on our priorities, like the NHS, and are able to strike free trade deals around the world. We will take back control of our laws, ending the jurisdiction of the European Court of Justice. We will keep people safe against crime, terrorism and other threats by working closely with Europe, and we will protect the integrity of our United Kingdom. I have consistently made clear that I would support a deal that respects the referendum result while putting practical reality for our economy and our country over ideology. This deal does that, in my opinion. Whatever your view of what our future relationship should be with the EU, there is no escaping the need for a legally operative Northern Ireland backstop in the short term. The EU have been consistent and clear on this. No backstop, no deal. And I, for one, do not want no deal. I know there is great concern about the backstop, so I'm actively discussing it with Number 10 and the Attorney General. I think our PM deserves my support, and that is my view, arrived at all by myself, not because I'm a minister. Politics is the art of the possible, and Brexit was always going to be compromise. You cannot leave the club and have the exact same benefits. I am convinced that the agreement is the best that we can negotiate, and I will support it on December the 11th. In the event the House of Commons cannot resolve this, it is right to keep all options and all courses of action on the table.
City Council to allow you to be chopped. Winchester City Council has approved a controversial application to fell a perfectly healthy yew tree, despite opposition. The tree stands within the rear garden of the deanery in the close. The application to chop it in September claimed that it was affecting the medieval Lockburn running under the close. Susan Croker, head of landscape and open space, has issued a decision notice earlier this month reading, "In pursuance of its powers under the above-mentioned acts, the council, as the local planning authority, raises no objection to the above works in accordance with the plans." Dr. Catherine Gale, a professor of cognitive epidemiology at Southampton University of Culverwell Gardens, Winchester, was one of five people to object. Excuse me. She said felling this yew tree would remove a fine, large, healthy tree that has significant landscape value now and a potential to continue enhancing the landscape for decades to come. Excuse me. I'm sorry about that. The primary reason for the applicants wants this tree felled is that the presence is incompatible with their plan to build a road across the deanery garden, but planning permission for that later scheme has not yet been sought. Canon Annabel Boys, Receiver General at the Cathedral, said, "As custodians and guardians of the cathedral estates, we need to strike a balance between caring for our natural environment and protecting our heritage. The Lockburn is one of the earliest surviving drainage systems in the country, dating from 1090, and it is a site of great historic significance. It is unclear when the felling will take place."
Prison inmates unable to wash is the headline over an aerial picture of the prison in Winchester. Nearly half of Winchester prisoners say they can't wash daily, a new study has found. The Howard League for Penal Reform has found many prisoners in England and Wales are unable to shower every day, with some children in custody getting only two showers a week. In one London prison, the proportion of men who said that they could shower daily was just one in six. It was revealed that at Winchester Prison, just 55% of inmates said they could shower every day. Francis Crook, chief executive of the Howard League for Penal Reform, said, "The government has said that it wants prisons to be clean and decent, but it is ignoring the fact that thousands of children and adult men are smelly and dirty because they cannot get a shower. It's no good cleaning up prisons if prisoners are not able to keep clean. If you want people to be work ready and ready to integrate to lead a good and useful life, people in prison must at least be able to have a shower every morning, eat breakfast and face the day with purpose. Squalor and idleness will not ready people to be law-abiding citizens on release." The study comes after a report slammed Winchester Prison earlier this year. An inspection by the Independent Monitoring Board, IMB, in September found prisoners were locked up for 23 hours a day in squalid conditions. Other findings include staff shortages have limited searches, leading to more drugs and contraband. Disabled prisoners cannot access basic facilities. A lack of opportunities inside and services outside the prison means prisoners are ill-prepared for release. A prison service spokesman said, "All prisoners have access to washing facilities every day, and the statistics demonstrate that the vast majority of prisoners have a daily access to showers. We are committed to improving decency and living conditions across the estate."
And this with a lovely photograph of about 14 people of all ages and bunting to celebrate the thing and one dog. Headed "Jews Plant Bluebells in New City Park." Members of Winchester's Jewish community have a plan. They aim to carpet woodland at a new park with bluebells to flower every spring. Some 15 people were at Hillier's Haven in Abbotsbarton planting the bulbs to celebrate Mitzvah Day, when Jewish people undertake work for good of the general community. In recent years, they have gardened next to the weirs and turned their attention to Hillier's Haven, which was formally opened this year. It features woodland paths, a meadow with stone fire pits, bird and bat boxes, a sculpture trail and interpretation boards. It's a large space and they hope to cover more ground next year. William Carver, the organiser, said, "Hillier's Haven is a wonderful addition for walkers and nature lovers. We really enjoyed planting the bluebells and will return to see how they were doing in the spring. Thanks to Winchester City Council for letting us make a small contribution to the beauty of the area."
And another article about nature. Police probe the theft of a rare fungus in forest. A rare fungus has been cut down from the New Forest, sparking a police investigation. It was removed from its natural habitat in the New Forest, causing the Forestry Commission to alert the police. It is feared the protected fungi, Hericum erinaceus, otherwise known as old man's beard, has been mistakenly taken to be used in cooking. Restaurateurs are suspected of foraging fungi in the New Forest. The Forestry Commission spokeswoman said, "I can confirm that three specimens of rare fungi, Hericum erinaceus, were cut and removed from their natural habitat, and we've referred this matter to the local police and conservation body of Natural England. Taking of rare protected species from anywhere by anyone is illegal and incurs high penalties under the CPS guidance. It is a matter for the Wildlife Crime Unit." She added, "It is notable that New Forest is one of the most important designated sites in England for fungi, with a lot of endangered species, which can easily be mistaken for varieties that are picked for eating." A Hampshire police spokesman said police officers were contacted by Forestry Commission, who reported large quantities of fungi being taken from the New Forest. The matter is under investigation. The incident comes just weeks after the Chronicle reported on how woodland bosses had been accused of misleading attempt to prevent people from picking mushrooms in the New Forest. The Forestry Commission came under fire recently from professional forager Daniel Butler, who claims it wrongly trying to stop people taking part in a harmless and lawful activity that cannot be banned. He spoke out following the Commission's decision to install scores of red signs saying harvesting is not allowed on any scale. The Commission is said to be non-commercial mushroom picking is not illegal. And there are two pictures. The first one is of forager Daniel Butler, who was accused by the Forestry Commission of stirring animosity, and he's sitting on a fallen tree with his basket full of mushrooms that he's foraged. And the second one is of a tree with a large open bowl on it, and out of that bowl is this fungus that has been taken. And it does, in fact, look exactly like a beard.
This article relates to the Boomtown Musical Festival giving of money to local charities. A music festival has raised more than £150,000 for good causes, with more than £30,000 going directly to projects in this area. Boomtown Fair, held every summer at the Matterley Estate near Winchester, raised £152,624.67 at this year's event. Organisers say helping the community has always been a large part of Boomtown's ethos, and this year's main partner was the Winnell Rock School, which works with young people. The organisation is set to receive £6,266, which was directly funded from an optional £2 donation festival goers made when they bought tickets. This will fund free music tuition and band workshops to help youngsters express themselves and build confidence. Paul Pounceford, chairman of trustees at Winnell Rock School, said, "We are delighted to have received this funding. The money will provide a programme of free music-making workshops to young people who would not normally have access to this opportunity." Our members loved participating in the creative workshops and the special sessions run by Boomtown, both before and during the festival, and we are very grateful for the support that Boomtown is providing. Other groups boosted by the cash, which was also raised through collections, include local parish councils, Wimmel Primary School, and Southampton's The Rose Road Association, and Winchester Go LD. Charities that support people with learning disabilities. Some £120,873.67 was raised for a host of national and international charities. Organisers also confirmed Winchester Action on Climate Change, WIN-ACC, would be the festival's local charity partner in 2019. Boomtown co-founder Lack Mitchell said, "Supporting local charities that share the same passions as we do is so important to us, and it's really exciting to be working alongside WIN-ACC this year."
Laser danger. Police have warned of the potentially catastrophic circumstances after a green laser was shone at a passenger plane as it prepared to land at Southampton Airport. The cockpit of the aircraft, travelling from Glasgow over the Winchester area, was targeted as it circled at 7,000 feet above the airport at 8:34 p.m. last Wednesday. A police spokesman said, "We received a report from control tower staff at Southampton Airport that a green laser was being shone into the cockpit of a plane which was circling 7,000 feet in the air over Netley. Luckily, it was not shone directly into the pilot's eyes and he was able to maintain control of the aircraft. But this careless act by someone on the ground below could have had catastrophic consequences, particularly when coupled with the fact that the visibility was reduced as a result of fog. Officers deployed to an area near IKEA in Southampton, as the laser had reportedly been shone from this area, but the person responsible was not located. The plane, which had flown from Glasgow, was diverted to another airport as a result of the fog, where it landed safely." PC Andy Sparshot added, "This activity is highly dangerous and irresponsible during any phase of flight. However, during critical times such as landings at night or with reduced visibility, it is especially dangerous. A large number of laser incidents involve young people whose parents are not aware that their child owns a laser or believe it is a suitable toy. It is not illegal to possess a laser pen, but we are keen to stress to both adults and children that these items are dangerous, especially when shone directly at an aircraft. Lasers are not toys. They could lead to serious visual impairment for life if used in an appropriate way."
Patients happy with Southern. Results from an annual patient feedback survey show that Southern Health users are happy with the service they have received. More than 250 Hampshire patients completed the survey, which saw the local NHS Trust rank among the top performing organisations in some areas and with no results in the bottom category. The overall experience rating was 73%, above the national average of 68%, and 88% of those surveys agreed that Southern Health treated them with dignity and respect. Chief Executive Dr. Nick Broughton said, "We welcome the results of the survey undertaken by our patients. Whilst we are continuing to work to make further improvements across our mental health service, it is a really encouraging sign that we are moving in the right direction and responding to past criticisms, for example, in terms of how we better involve friends and family in mental health care. There is much still to be done, and our aim is to see the continual improvement in our scores in subsequent years." A further 74% of patients agreed that they had received the care they needed in the past year, higher than the average score of 66%. Nathan Clifford, a past patient who now works for the Trust as an expert by experience, said, "I have been involved in the recent transformation project at the Trust, which has been a real honour, and not to mention having a very positive effect on my own mental health."
A church in Winchester city centre is looking to break the stereotypes around religion and attract new people in the process. And then there is a picture showing the interior of the United Church on Jury Street in Winchester. The United Church in Jury Street has recently started a new relaunch program with plans to show the diversity of worshippers through a number of events in the next few years. A few of the events have already been announced for December. Tim Searle, minister at the church, said, "We want to be open to all and feel that we are an inclusive church where people may join us on a journey. We're a church in the Methodist and United Reformed tradition. And whilst this certainly inspires and guides what we believe and do, our vision is very much about meeting people where they are and exploring a common walk with them." He continued, "Sometimes we think of churchgoers in a very monocultural way, that we all believe the same things, we all look the same, we all have the same lives. Actually, if you dig down, we've all got very different lives and views on life. As well as those who worship with us, our church connects with a whole range of other people and communities. We've been looking at our vision for the next few years, and as part of this, we will be holding a series of days when the church will be open so that people can discover more about us. The church will host 3 drop-in style open days on Thursday, Friday and Saturday, December the 6th, 7th and 8th, between 10 a.m. and 4 p.m. Free tea and coffee will be available. Members have also said they wish to attract to the events people who have been put off religion in the past. Mr. Searle said, "I feel very sympathetic to people who have been put off by religion for one reason or another. Alongside widening its community, the church aims to improve the planet by reducing its use of resources." Mission coordinator Joe Crocker said, "Like any person or any organization, we leave a footprint. Living more lightly means trying to live in constructive ways where our environmental impact on carbon emissions or use of the world's resources, our impact on biodiversity is minimized rather than let loose in a careless, reckless way."
Awards for fire and police heroes. Hampshire firefighters who saved a colleague's life have been honoured with a prestigious award. David Ling, a crew manager for the service, had a heart attack during a training exercise at Stockbridge Fire Station. Firefighters Joshua Barnes and Alistair Reynolds, crew manager Ian Tranham and watch manager Rick Moore performed life-saving CPR on him with the aid of a defibrillator and oxygen therapy. They won the Chairman's Award for the Hampshire Fire and Rescue Services Celebrating Success Annual and collected the accolade at a ceremony at Victoria House, part of the Hampshire Constabulary headquarters at Netley. David said, "If I'm honest, if it wasn't for those boys, I would not be here anywhere else and I would be 6 foot under. I'm quite adamant about that. They done me good." Meanwhile, a police officer has been rewarded after he stopped an escaped prisoner who was fleeing along Hampshire's motorways. PC Adam Scott of Hampshire's Road Policing Unit was awarded the Chief Constable's Certificate of Commendation for his incredibly brave actions. As previously reported, Daryl Dempsey was chased by police across the M27 and M271 after fleeing Ford Prison in West Sussex on July 3, 2017. The 22-year-old from Eastbourne was jailed for 2 years in January after pleading guilty to dangerous driving at Southampton Crown Court. On July the 13th, officers from the Roads Policing Unit were made aware of the Isuzu Trooper vehicle being driven by the Dempsey. They approached the vehicle on the M271 close to the junction with the M27, but it failed to stop, so officers followed the vehicle. Dempsey did everything he could to avoid capture, driving across fields, driving on footpaths and even attempting to drive the wrong way along the M3. PC Scott took the split-second decision to force a collision, ending the 13-minute pursuit in Chilworth As a result, PC Scott suffered a lower back injury but continued to work. And we have two photographs, one of the entire Stockbridge Fire Station crew and the manager David Ling and councillor Ros Chadd, and he's holding his award for, I presume, the heart attack rescue. And then one of PC Adam Scott with Chief Constable Olivia Pinkney, looking very pleased with himself, as he should.
MP visits community cafe at City Church. Winchester MP Steve Bryan visited the community cafe at St Peter's Pastoral Centre in Jury Street to meet customers and sample the menu, cooked by First Bite, a local not-for-profit social enterprise. The community cafe is run by First Bite in partnership with the St Peter's Catholic Church and is this November enters its third year of operation. The weekly cafe welcomes around 60 diners each Thursday lunchtime. Customers enjoy freshly cooked fish pie, roast chicken and chocolate croissant pudding, creatively prepared on the site by chefs Melissa and Richard. Mr. Bryan said, "I first met Debbie back in the summer, where she briefed me on this superb initiative, so I was delighted to be able to pop down to the cafe and speak to the team and their happy customers. The cafe uses surplus food that would otherwise be wasted, which means that mains are available for under £5, with desserts at £1.50, and delicious pay-as-much-as-you-feel soup and bread always available. The cafe has become a cornerstone of the city's community," said Debbie Lockett, co-founder of First Bite. "We love feeding the great mix of guests, from mums and tots, local workers and the homeless, to the elderly and passing tourists. First Bite is planning a community Christmas lunch. It's also looking for new city centre locations to run its workshops and expand its community cafe operation," she added. First Bite food donations come from Fair Share UK, Tesco's, Waitrose, M&S and local suppliers such as Hoxton Bakehouse, Chalk Stream Foods, Rosary Goat's Cheese and Alsford Watercress farmer Andrew Janaway, among many others.
The headline to this article says, "Vets Save Tortured Hedgehog." Staff at Vets Now in Winchester have been praised for saving the life of a hedgehog after it was targeted by cruel torturers. The hedgehog was brought into the out-of-hours emergency care provider's clinic in Eastern Lane, Winnell, on Sunday night, suffering from horrendous neck injuries. It is thought that someone had placed cable ties around her. Horrified vets and vet nurses removed the ties and treated the wounds of the animal they had called Valerie, meaning strong and healthy. They applied manuka honey dressing and disinfectant before administering fluids, pain relief and antibiotics. While Valerie is still not back to full health, she's on the road to recovery and is being kept under close observation at the home of one of the clinic's staff. Vet nurse Amy Neller said it was clear from the way the cable ties had been tightened that it had been an act of deliberate cruelty. She said, "I've been very fortunate in that I've not seen many intentional cruelty cases in my career. However, I was horrified by what has been done to this young hedgehog. Once a common sight, with estimated population of 30 million in the 1950s, There are now fewer than 1 million hedgehogs in the UK. Their decline is believed to have been caused by loss of habitat in towns and countryside, road deaths, and a possible rise in predator numbers such as badgers. In 2015, the People's Trust for Endangered Species and the British Hedgehog Preservation Society launched a joint 10-year conservation strategy for the species, which have been voted the nation's favourite wild animal. Faye Vass, chief executive of the British Hedgehog Preservation Society, said she was sickened to hear about Valerie's plight and praised the vets and vet nurses involved in saving her. She said the pain and fear this poor animal must have gone through at the hands of its torturers is unimaginable. Thank goodness it's now safe and receiving care and treatment it so needs. Now, there are two pictures. The first is a largish picture of the hedgehog, which has got bandages wrapped round its neck and round its left foreleg. And the other picture is of one of these cable ties. They are these plastic pieces that one end goes into a hole that is on the other end and is then pulled exceedingly tight. And you cannot release the tightness.
County Wine Lovers Swoop On Festival. Winchester Guildhall was filled with happy faces and beaming vintners at this year's two-day wine festival. Lovers of the drink came from all over the county to celebrate some of the finest wines in Hampshire. They were also able to clink glasses with the BBC's wine experts, Susie Barry and Peter Richards, who were on hand to show guests around and recommend the tastiest bottles the festival had to offer. Susie and Peter were two of the many experts offering masterclasses throughout the day. Representatives of the Alsford-based wineries, Hattingley Valley and Rames, were on hand to deliver special lessons on the highest-rated sparkling wines, and tasters were far from scarce. A prize draw was held and a range of exclusive rewards were given out, including a Riedel Performance decanter worth £175 and a £50 voucher for Kyoto Kitchen in Parchment Street. And there are about 8 photographs, variously of Karen Pavey, Sharon Harrington and Susie Smith, Georgia Ady and Abigail Salisbury, Peter Richards, Louise Hill and Susie Barry, the expert, Sue and Kev Hopgood, Anna Dollard, Lucy Jessop and Sal Henley, and a picture of the packed Bapsey Hall in Winchester, Guildhall, and lastly Lucy Lansade and Thierry Comille, who must be French because they've got berets on.
Children sending presents to Europe. Primary schools have helped to fill 400 gift box shoe boxes for charity. St. Faith's, St. Bede's, Compton and Harestock collectively donated the boxes to the annual Winchester Rotary Shoebox Appeal. Each box was filled with toys, books, pens and other Christmas gifts. The project has been run for over 30 years by Rotary clubs across Hampshire and Dorset, with upwards of 25,000 boxes being donated last year. The Winchester donations will go to Albania, Montenegro, Moldova and Romania. And there's a lovely picture of all the children holding their beautifully wrapped boxes.
Here's a good bit of news for drivers in Winchester. Extra buses for the park and ride. Extra park and ride journeys are being laid on for the festive season in Winchester this year. The City Council has teamed up with Winchester BID to fund extra services in the 6 weeks to Christmas. The enhanced timetable began on November 17th, including a free Sunday service, which will run every Sunday until December the 23rd. Passengers will also benefit from extra buses between the Westgate and South Park and Ride, as well as extended running times until 8:30 at night. Councillor Jan Warwick, portfolio holder for transport, said we hope to make life a little easier for our residents by offering them an affordable choice of parking during a hectic time. This, together with the knock-on increased footfall in our high street, and the associated benefits for our local businesses means that this arrangement is for the benefit of all. It will also help to keep traffic out of the city centre, thereby reducing congestion and pollution. Chris Turner, BID Business Development Director, added, "The Winchester business community is clearly very supportive of this scheme, which allows more visitors into our city while at the same time reducing traffic flow." And there's a picture of a green park and ride bus just above the article.
And two short ones. The Book Fair returns. Winchester Book Fair returns to the Discovery Centre on Jury Street on Saturday the 8th of December from 10 a.m. to 4 p.m. There will be hundreds of antiquarian and second-hand books for sale, free admission. And the other, fears for salmon over mullet nets proposals. Plans by the Southern Inshore Fisheries Conservative Association, SIFCA, to allow ring netting for declining mullet stocks in the estuaries of some of England's most famous salmon and sea trout rivers, including the Test and Itchen, have been slammed as dangerous and irresponsible by the Angling Trust. The SIFCA proposals envisage ring nets up to 6 metres deep and 350 metres long, strung across 75% of the river channel. This represents a 2,000 square metre wall of lethal monofilament, which could cause untold damage to salmon, sea trout and bass, in addition to further reducing already declining mullet stocks, says the Trust. The Environment Agency has expressed concerns about the impact of estuary netting on threatened and legally protected salmon and sea trout stocks, which are highly vulnerable to accidental capture by netsmen targeting mullet.
Allen Lecture. University of Winchester Chancellor Alan Titchmarsh will deliver an inaugural Christmas lecture. The event will open with the opportunity for visitors to try out new technology in practical demonstrations guided by university staff, followed by a short carol performance. This will be followed by Alan Titchmarsh's lecture and will focus on living life to the fullest. It all takes place on December the 5th at the Stripe, King Alfred's Quarter, Sparkford Road, West Hill. Doors open at 5:30 p.m. for activities and the lectures start at 6:30 p.m. Refreshments will be provided throughout the evening and complimentary parking will be available on the ditch. Book a place by emailing conferences@winchester.ac.uk. That's conferences@winchester.ac.uk.
Thank you. That concludes the extracts for this week. So thank you to our editors, Margaret Boyden and Linda Vincent. And thanks to our copying, dispatch and memory stick preparation teams. And of course, thanks to our readers, Nikki Baring.
Goodbye.
Norma York.
Goodbye.
And Paul Maxlow Tomlinson.
Goodbye.
And from me, Keith Vincent, goodbye and do have an enjoyable week. And when you finish with this week's recording, please put the memory stick back in the wallet and return it as soon as possible, placing the address label inside the wallet. Thank you.